There we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on.
Here we go.
Yay! Oh, but she's here already.
There we go. We are live.
We are live on All About Wine on this March 9th, 2023 edition. It is 7:01 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Got that, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
And
no.
we will be on daylight saving time come Sunday morning at 2 o'clock in the morning. So set your clocks for 2 o'clock, get up and change your clock forward an hour, and then you can go back to bed.
Or just sleep in at the weekend, you know, who cares?
And then
enjoy it.
Be an hour late for work Monday morning because you'll forget. We have a guest tonight, Jessica Coogan or Coogan. I'm not sure if it's Coogan or Coogan. She is a lot of stuff. She's done. Well, I'll tell you what. Instead of me sitting there telling you what she has done, she is waiting in the green room. So why don't we just bring her in and have her tell us what all she's done? Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Coogan or Coogan?
It's Coogan.
Coogan, okay.
Coogan. Yeah, I hope that Coogan you have a glass of wine right now as we talk, because it is 7 o'clock your time.
Yes, of course. I always have a glass of wine during the show. This is just sort of a nondescript red wine that my wife particularly likes, and she brought it in to me and says, here. And so I'm not even sure what year it is or which one of the two or three she likes, but it's always good to have a glass of wine with the show.
Absolutely. Did she buy it in a store or did she buy it online?
We get most of our wines in the store. We go out shopping to the local, different places. Publix, our supermarkets here, has a BOGO quite often, and we look for wines that we like that are buy one, get one, so we're getting $22, $25 wines for $12, $13. And so it's our favorite way to get it, but we also frequent liquor stores or wine shops, myself particularly, and find wines and say, oh, this looks interesting, and I pick it up. So to answer the question, everywhere.
Got it. So like Discovery is more at the wine store and Publix is more of the deal.
That's it. That's it exactly.
Makes sense.
It works very well for us. In fact, we're getting so many bottles of wine. We've got the wine refrigerators filled up, and we've got our 100-bottle rack filled up and a couple of smaller ones, and we keep saying we need to drink more, but we're drinking a lot now anyway. So.
what an impossible problem.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. But that's...
It's hard to decide. There's so many great wines. It's just hard. So hard.
You're absolutely right, And we find some that we like, and we'll pick up a couple more of those, and we sit down just for a meal or a casual, and we pull those out and enjoy those with the meal. And then we find different ones that are new to us, and so we try those without food because we want to taste everything that it's going to present us. And so, but yeah, it's you know, when you're into wine, as you well understand, it's an ongoing journey and an ongoing discovery.
For sure. I mean, I think that's like one of the most beautiful yet misunderstood parts of wine in many ways. It feels so opaque, but one of the best, one of the most awesome things I think that has happened in wine is really vineyard suppliers being able to tell their story online and have a moment with the customer that they did not have prior to the internet.
And that's a good point, because you can only about the only way you can understand what it was all about was be at the winery. And I remember those years. And then when the internet came in, you can just click on it and find so much information there. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's definitely, I mean, I didn't grow up in California. I grew up in Washington, D.C. And wine wasn't a big part of my family's life. And so for me, when I moved to New York City and I would go to the local store, the local wine shop, because in New York, you can't sell at the grocery store, you can only get at the local wine shop that has a permit. And I'd walk into the store and it was like the most overwhelming feeling I have ever felt. And I worked in an industry that is overwhelming in fashion and beauty. But in a wine store, it was like all of these wines, all of these bottles, all of these labels, and without any information. Right?
That's true.
Mean,
that's true. Yeah.
And for people who want to get into wine, it's scary, and you feel like you're just clueless. And when I ended up going into the wine industry, that feeling has always resonated in all of the work that I do, which is to try and tell the story so that customers can come to informed decisions for themselves.
That's very good. I mean, it is overwhelming. A good example is my grandson, his bride asked us the other day when we saw him, could you teach us about wine? And I said, well, what do you drink? And they say, we go to the store and we just don't know what to get. There's so many different ones. There are so many different brands. And it happens to a lot of people, and they get overwhelmed and they don't know anything. And having a background, a story, having something to be able to relate to is, I think, of the utmost importance.
I mean, I totally agree. I mean, it's really interesting because I'm sure you absolutely know this. I mean, Costco is, I don't know if they currently are the number one seller of wine in the country, but they do a pretty significant volume. However, they're SKU count is like an eighth of what you see in other stores when it comes to wine. And one aspect of Costco that I think has really done like so well with customers and kind of a little company that I built on the side is, you know, they demo at Costco or the Price Club. They would demo, you know, you would do the little taste of all the food. Some people would go in there to have their lunch.
Right.
And when we, with wine, I just felt that, I'm like, why is there not somebody in the wine department talking about the wine? Not just like the somm who's, or the wine manager, but like people, customers talking to customers about wine. And it really makes a difference. And I can, you know, with so many stores around the country now, especially the big retail liquor stores, they're really making such an effort to connect with customers and to talk about the story, which I believe is related to the survival of wine at this point.
Yeah, it's a very good point. I mean, I was just last week during the show, I was pointing out how wine sales are down in so many areas and so many age groups. And and it's, I think it's just, particularly in the millennials and the Gen X, is not aware of it. They're bombarded with other spirits and drinks and all sorts of stuff. And wine is not in the forefront in advertising and stuff. They just sort of sit back and say, okay, we're wine. People like us, and don't say anything else. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's A, very expensive. And as you know, it's expensive to make wine, less expensive to make spirits. But I think that there are a couple things that have been going on. Gen X as a cohort just cannot maintain the sales of wine. They're just not big enough. Millennials came into income much later than Gen X or boomers because of 2008. And so their interest in investing in wine and connecting with wine was really related to the amount of money that they had to spend,
which was
not a lot. And so then you have these other trends that come into play, which are wellness, health, you know, enjoying more organic foods, knowing what you're putting in your body. And I think that trend kind of eclipsed the message of wine, which is all of those things. And you have instead these ready, you have the, you know, these ready to drink cocktails, which claim, you know, low calorie, low sugar, all of this stuff. But in fact, it's actually not really good stuff to put in your body. Right? It's just insane.
Yeah.
So I believe Gen Z is going to come back to wine in a very big way.
You think so, huh?
I do. Yeah. I really, really do. Your grandson's kids, or my kids actually, your grandson doesn't have kids yet, but kids who were born 2000 to 2000, or no, sorry, 98 to 2010, I really think that they're coming of age, and I really think they're going to lead the charge.
Well, it's the thing I think is going to help that too is, like you were just saying, the healthiness trend.
Mm-hmm.
These are healthy things to have and all that. And wine is starting to embrace that that thought more with their organic and their biodynamic and their regenerative and all that stuff that I think that are catchwords for that generation. And if they can continue with that trend, I think it's going to really help a lot.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I wrote this down because I am always curious, but Gen Z is from 1997 to 2012.
I'm telling you, they're the ones. There's going to be some report about, remember the report that came out about a glass of red wine is good for your heart?
Oh, yeah. And then all the other reports saying that's not true. So,
But it was transformative for the industry.
Yeah.
It was. And I think that we'll see something similar.
Well, they're constantly coming out with reports about the health benefits of wine. And like I say, every time they come out with two or three reports saying it, then all of a sudden a study pops up that's saying, we found that this is not good for you, and anything more than 2 ounces a week is going to, you know, I mean, ridiculous stuff like that. And
yeah.
I would hope that any generation is intelligent enough to understand that that's ridiculous compared to all the reports that are saying that it's good for you and how it's helped you, and the numerous studies that have shown that red wine is good for you and all the antioxidants and everything else that's included in it. So, mm-hmm. like I say, you just got to hope that the people aren't swayed mm-hmm. too much by the one or two reports that come out to say that it's bad and listen to all the good reports.
I think obviously it's hard to say at this moment because Gen Z is just coming on. But I do believe, and you do have millennials who do enjoy wine. They just are not willing to invest as much money. And I do believe that at the core, customers know that wine is better for you than spirits and anything ready to drink, anything at all. But the cost is still challenging. I mean, I was just looking at a couple of competitors. I mean, one of the reasons that I started my wine company that was acquired by Vintage was because of how prohibitive costs are. And you get good, really good wine. Like, you and your wife have figured it out. Like, you've got your plan of attack.
Yeah.
And so I think that perhaps one aspect is kind of, you know, producing better quality wine at a more reasonable price
is so important, for the simple fact that, like you say, wine is looked at as being an expensive indulgence that you only partake of on special occasions. It's not an evening drink or anything. I mean, you come home from work and you open up a beer. You don't open up a bottle mm-hmm. of wine because mm-hmm. it's wine. And
it's a commitment because of the corks. Like, you know, I mean, it's such an investment, you know.
Yes.
It's just, and I think that, like, in Australia, they figured it out with, you know, using Stelvins as their primary closure. And mm-hmm. I mean, I know that it's a huge debate in our industry, but I believe if there are more screw caps, that there would be more customers inclined to buy wine because they would close it up.
Yeah, the thing is, it's so crazy, though. People are still hesitant. Yeah, hesitant when it comes to mm-hmm. screw caps on wine. But yet, yeah. the sales of canned wines are shooting through the roof, increasing
like
by
insane,
like over 300%. You know? I don't want a screw cap on my bottle of wine, but here, give me this can, and I'll, you know, I don't understand the reasoning behind that. You know?
And I mean, well, because it's like in a smaller container, right?
It feels
more like partaking versus like a big investment. And it's just more, I think the word is accessibility, you know, just much more accessible.
Mm,
it's just,
yeah.
I think with canned wine, the problem is that it doesn't, as in my personal opinion, is that it doesn't age very well in those cans. And,
well,
you know, you've got to turn inventory fast.
It's not made to age. It's made to drink beer, I think. You buy a 6-pack or 12-pack of beer in a can, and you know mm-hmm. what to do with it. You go home, you throw it in the refrigerator. When you come home from work or doing yard work or something, you open it up and you drink it. And I think the can of wine is trying to, I don't want to say trying to get that market because it's a little bit different post, but they're trying to be as casual as that. It's something you can take to the beach with you. It's something that you can go on a picnic. You can, you know, cans are accepted a lot more places than a bottle would be. And, you know, especially here in Florida, we, you know, you no bottles on the beach and stuff like that, but you can take cans and it's the convenience is so much better. And like I say, it's just it's to drink now. It's nothing that you're going to age. And from what I'm reading, and I'm have to admit, I think I've had one can of wine. But from what I'm reading, there's some really some premium wines being put into cans now.
Yeah. I mean, there definitely are, but not, I mean, many of the premium brands that appeal to customers who are purchasing $45 bottle of wine, they won't put their brand on it, but they would, they will make the wine for it.
Well, you know, and the thing is too, back to the cost, and you know, you're well aware of the situation with cost. You're not going to spend a whole lot of money for a can of wine. A bottle of wine, you feel like it's a bottle of wine, but a can of wine, I'm not going to spend $22 for a can, you know. And think it's perception is a lot to do with that.
Yeah. I totally agree. But this like goes back to the Stealth enclosure. It's like, you know, cans make it, but if you had Stealth enclosures, then you just like open up. I believe that you would just open up your customer base in such a big way. I mean, you will also lose some customers, but I think that the longer, you know, just, I think that longer term, it's just, it will prove out to be the right decision. I am not involved in any aspect of, I mean, I, you know, do labels and whatnot and closures, but like, I can't win the battle on closures. That's like, that is a big, big battle, I think, played out within the industry without really talking to customers.
I think I don't know. You're right. It's a big, big battle. And I've talked to wineries over the years, and I've mentioned the Stelvin, and, you know, it's just like I said a very, very dirty word to them. And they, well, no, we use cork, and that's what we use all the time, and that's what will never change and all that. And I said, well, doesn't that increase the cost of everything? And you get this little pause in there because it does. It's more expensive to, you know, use a cork in the capsule than it is to just put a Stealth enclosure on it. And but still, you know, the old school, good old boys of California winemakers are not going to go Stelvin. I mean, and that's it. They're not.
I think that's it for the moment. But again, like as we see sales decline, they're going to have to seek inspiration. And I think that. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say, therefore, cans and boxes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are tons of boxes and Bota box, I think they sell like 2 million boxes a year.
Yeah, yeah. And black boxes is right up there also. And, you know, people are so excited about awards, and black boxes has gotten over 150 awards at competition.
Really?
I mean, it's outrageous the number of awards they've.
Wow, I had no idea. Who makes is it the wine group that makes Black Box?
I think so. Yeah, I think it is the wine group. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's totally awesome. I mean, we need, like, stuff like that is so important. And it, at the end, I really believe that that kind of enjoyment, starting, you know, with boxed wine, whatever, you know, easy, accessible, the job of, you know, the more premium wineries really is to create a stepping stone for those who enjoy boxed wine, you know, and we just do it well.
Yeah, and there's more, again, just like cans, there's more and more boxed wines on the shelf. And I think it's past the novelty stage. When Franzia came out with it originally, it was a novelty, you know, wine in a box. But now, and what, oh, geez, I'm going to have to look up this company. I've got it here. Oh, who is it? I can't think of their name now. Oh, my gosh.
Franzia is made by, actually, by the wine group, and Black Box is made by Gallo.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's, you know, Franzia has been around forever and ever, and that was my...
Franzia was like, the Tetra Pak innovation was like earth-shattering change.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, and you notice like how Franzia is always at the back of the shot. Like, it's always at the end.
On the bottom, in the back.
On purpose.
Yeah.
So that you have to walk through the entire aisle. I know. Yeah. Crazy things those crazy salespeople do.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they do. Oh, that's a box. I get it. But it's Franzia. And Franzia has that, you know, has that cheap box reputation. But, boy, they sell a lot of it. And
oh, my God. Oh, just, I mean, that is the bread and butter of the wine group. Well, I mean, they do Cupcake and Chloe. And I believe, I don't even know if they're still doing King Cannon, but I'm Fish On.
Yeah,
I mean,
they are.
Have some,
yeah.
They have some big hits, but Franzia is the winner. I mean.
Yeah, they're the one that carries a lot of those others, yeah. And
mm-hmm.
And the stores know this, too. I mean, when they walk in there and say, we want to increase the exposure of Cupcake, the stores don't hesitate because the distributors are just pulled back on Franzia, and it's money. I mean, they know.
Oh,
that.
My gosh. Yeah. Mm. How do you know? Yes. So it's just. I hope it changes, but who knows?
Oh, yeah, I do too. Yeah,
I'm not on the wholesale side. The beauty of being, you know, being on the digital side is there are no rules.
Right. Yeah. That's very true. I wish I could think of the name of that company. I get emails from them too, and that's what the bad thing about it is. I can't
from
think
you.
Of the company. They've came out, Castle Ridge, there it is, Castle Ridge.
Uh-huh.
It just dawned on me, I didn't see it, but it just dawned on me. Castle Ridge just came out with a box of premium wine, and this is costing retail, I think they're charging close to $100. And
what?
It's a, yeah, it's a three-bottle box as...
Uh-huh.
Most of them are three or four bottle box, and they're charging close to $100. But their individual bottles of wine run up in the mid-40s. So when you do this, you're saving like, you know, the 25% to 30% on the cost. And they had a big thing. Their email explained it. They said that the footprint of doing a box as opposed to wine in a bottle, and the cost of shipping bottles in, the cost of shipping bottles out, and the cost of doing everything is, it was, they quoted the numbers, and it was like unbelievable difference of going on a box in the premium here.
Yeah.
And they said that they were really surprised that it's selling as well as it does. But, you know, they have their own niche of customers who will buy their product, just like most wineries do online and all that. But yeah, the way they're talking, it's being picked up and being sold to a greater number of people. And I just, you know, good for them. But the point being is how much cheaper they're saying it is to do this through a box because of weight.
Heavy. Glass is very heavy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I had the winery, when I ship a case, I mean, I'm looking at a full case of wine runs about 38 pounds. And with the cost of shipping now, the shipping cost now is outrageous. Mm-hmm. It's frightening how much it costs.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't, not even including like the shipper and the labor and, you know, to get the wine box.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just, you know, that's just, you know, and to get the bottles in, it's just, it's frightening now. I closed the winery down in 2016, and it's a good thing I did, because I would not be able to make it through the pandemic to begin with. And the cost of stuff now is just staggering.
Yeah. Where was your winery?
Here in Florida, just north of Tampa, Florida State Winery. And actually, I closed in 2016. The doctor told me I have diabetes, and doctor said, not sure how diabetes is going to react to me. It's from Agent Orange. And she said, it's affecting your health too greatly to work with the stress and stuff. She says, I highly recommend you close the winery. And so much turmoil mentally and discussions with the wife, and we did close it.
Yeah.
And actually, in retrospect, it's a good thing, because to the other wineries around the state, and at the time, it was good. If we'd waited a couple years, it'd put us in the middle of the pandemic, and we would have just been, you know, just out of business with all this inventory. So it ended up working well, but we had a variety of different things, Florida-based fruits and stuff like that, and all. And it was fun.
It's a big wine state, you know, it's like Texas, Florida, Park. They like their wine.
Texas. Yeah. I don't know what is happening with Texas with the weather, though. That's just frightening what's going on in a lot of areas of Texas on the weather and how it's affecting it. Whenever I see weather hitting an area, I always look up the vineyards in that area and see what's going on. And vineyards are, this time of year, are pretty safe, but boy, there's been some devastating weather events to vineyards around the world in the last 2 or 3 years.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. Like I'm in California, and we have been through a drought for the last couple of years. It's been horrible. And fires, as you all know. And it has been raining nonstop for like the last. And I'm so happy that we have so much rain. But it's just, it's crazy. It's craziness.
But that rain is translating into snow in the mountains, and that's going to melt, and they're already starting to warn about floods.
Yeah. It's like we can't seem, like the pendulum is just like swinging so hard back and forth. It's like you feel, the one thing that we always count on is the weather, and it's like it's like we're feeling like schizophrenic because of the conditions of weather.
And you can't count on something to give yourself a good grape crop because you don't know what's going to happen. And that's scary.
Very good point. And you know how much money is put into a vineyard.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And to lose a vineyard to anything, to fires, to droughts, to flooding, it's devastating for a winery.
It's kind of like, why would anybody get into the wine business?
Yeah. Well, it's the old saying, you know how to make $1 million in the wine business? Start with $5 million. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's such a wonderful industry. I mean, I just love it so much.
Really. We've been talking about, you know, a lot of interesting stuff, but, you know, tell us, you know, what does Jessica do? What are you involved with and what are you doing and everything? We haven't had an opportunity to really talk about you.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about things that are really relevant to what I do and what I care about. And the work that I do is really a reflection also of kind of the experience, like what I do for my work, which is really customer experience. I'm always thinking about how we can connect customers to a message in a way that is meaningful and in a way that feels good and exciting and delightful. And I am currently the Chief Growth and Experience Officer at Vintage Wine Estates. VWE acquired the company that I built with my co-founder, Cameron Hughes, called Cameron Hughes Wine. And that business from like 2008 to like 2017. And the business continues to just outperform in terms of, connecting with customers and exploring, like taking customers through a magnificent journey. Cameron's Wine is all about buying made wines on the bulk market, blending them up and selling them under the lot series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been such a joy because by doing that, we're very efficient. You know, we're not carrying the costs of a winery, but we are able to negotiate with vineyards that make exceptional wine that they decide that they're not going to use for their program.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just been such a fun business to be part of. And then at VWE, joining as my company to VWE, I mean, VWE has 13 wineries, a very large direct-to-consumer business, which is kind of my area of specialty, and does a lot of significant production for a lot of white label brands that are in grocery and, you know, well-known brands out there.
Right.
And it's just been such a really fun journey for me because, as I said at the beginning of our call, I never imagined that I would end up in the wine industry. I was firmly planted in fashion and beauty and in marketing and just ended up in this industry. And for many years, just focused so deeply on customers who are outside the industry, who want to be part of, like, who want to enjoy wine without feeling stupid. I can't say it any other way.
Yeah.
And it's just really that simple. And so that's really kind of been my mission. And I get to do it in a medium that I absolutely fell in love with, which is the internet. And, I just love the ability to share information about wines that are interesting. I love to connect customers to other customers who are enjoying the same wine. And there's just so many powerful ways to connect customers to the winery, to the brand story, and to a community through the internet. But it also is critically important to have the physical component as well. The digital piece is only as good as the physical, and the two together are better.
That's so true. Do you do virtual tastings? Are you conducting those?
Yep, we do them. I mean, obviously during the pandemic, they were kind of the mode of connecting.
The thing.
It was such a great moment for our industry because we were able to be in our customer's living room.
Yeah.
Or in their family room or in their kitchen and share kind of taking customers through like a really fun tasting. And I think, customers truly enjoyed it. And, you know, when things kind of came back to normal and, you know, customers started coming to the vineyards, whatnot, we still get so many requests to do virtual tastings that, in fact, we have to dedicate associates in the tasting room to just do virtual tastings.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always say the best for a customer to come to our wineries and have an experience with us,
right.
But there's no reason that we can't bring it to them.
And
the internet makes that possible.
And it's also possible to expand the wines that are being tasted. Do you offer tastings for all the brands that VWE has?
For all of our estate brands, yes.
Oh, okay. Because I'm looking on the webpage now, and you get yourself quite a list of wineries that you represent.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good family of brands and wineries. I mean, B.R. Cohn in Sonoma is just magical. And Bruce Cohn, the founder of B.R. Cohn, was the manager of the Doobie Brothers. And B.R. Cohn really is just like a tribute to like the joy of music and enjoying wine, kind of like both aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Vianza, which is also another gorgeous winery in Sonoma with an epic view of the valley. And that winery was owned by the Sebastiani family.
Oh,
and then we have,
okay.
Yeah. And then Clupigas in Calistoga, which I mean, just is a beautiful love story, but also like an absolute dedication to the art of architecture. It's just one of the most beautiful wineries architecturally that I've ever seen. And Girard, of course, a wine that many presidents have enjoyed, also has a tasting room there. And then Swanson is another brand that we have in Napa and Cosentino. Those are some of our vineyards in California. And then we also have vineyards in Oregon and Washington State. And it's super fun. It never gets boring.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine having all those wineries at your disposal. That is fantastic. It's, most people are at one, and it's great to do that. But to be able to have a variety of them is exciting.
It's one of the big efforts that we are putting out there is it's called the VWE Passport. And essentially, when you come to Sonoma or Napa, we build the itinerary for you. You don't have to call like 10 different wineries. We will do it for you. And then there's a benefit. You know, if you are visiting all of our wineries, you also get a discount associated with that.
Uh-huh. And let me explain something.
Kind
to the listeners here is, and I've mentioned this before, but it's an excellent time to reiterate. When you go to California and you want to visit a winery, a lot of them now do require reservations. And if you don't have a reservation, you just pop in, some will turn you away and others will give you a courtesy corner to sit in and give you a quick tasting just to get you out of there. But with something like this, with VWE, you can go through them and bypass all that hassle of trying to get reservations and trying to find who to call or who to contact or wait for an email to come back with you. One-stop shopping. You can't beat something like that. So
you can't. You can't. And also, you know, if some of your listeners, you know, love some of our brands, they're diehard BR Cohn fans, they can call BR Cohn and BR Cohn will be able to provide them the VWE passport. So any winery within the family, you know, whether you're aligned with the winery or the you know, the parent, the message is the same. You know, if you're interested in checking all the, you know, a bunch of different wineries out, we would love to do that for you.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, it's a great way to do it. Unless you're going to plan on just attending a couple of small wineries, and there's no such thing as a small winery in Napa or Sonoma anymore. So
no. Point well made. No, it's so true. And that, and I think the emphasis on calling to make a reservation and or going online to book a visit is really, really important.
Yes. Yes, it is. You know, it's and if you're going to California, you definitely have to go to Napa. If you're in Northern California, I mean, it's like Disney World. You have to go to Disney World at least once in your life or Disneyland. And you have to go to Napa at least once. So if you're planning a trip to California, here's a great in for you to get into different wineries and not have to worry about the hassle of booking and all that. That's a great thing, Jessica.
Absolutely. And your listeners are welcome to look us up. Vintage Wine Estates, our number is on there. Our email is on there. And just ask about the VWE passport program, and they will be hooked up.
All right, there you go. That's great. People don't understand how important something like that is, too, until you get out there, and then you go, "Oh, I wish I'd done this." You know, so you know, really, it's a good thing. So you. Well, you're expanding. I mean, you have gotten the revenues up. You're doing everything. Are you looking at appeal to Gen X and Gen Z and millennials? I mean, we were talking about that, and everything I'm reading about those groups is not good for the wine industry. And I just wonder what your approach is going to be.
I mean, our approach is to be where our customers shop. And if that is at their local store, then we will be there. If it is on Instacart, we will be there. If it is on, you know, Safeway.com, we will be there. If it is at one of our websites, drconewinery.com, we will be there.
There you go.
We really believe that it is, you know, one of the most important parts of what we do is, and of course you're talking to the person who oversees customer experience, is to really provide customers every opportunity in a way that is so super easy for them to connect with us.
Good. That's one of the things. I mean, wine is, and I hate to say this, and I hate to worry, but I've heard it used so much, and I've used it, intimidating. And I'd love to see it get away from that, the intimidation of wine. I want to see wine become so much, well, I even say that, friendly and not something that you would have to think about just for a special occasion or, you know, my mother and father-in-law is coming over. I need to pick up a nice bottle of wine. Well, you should have some nice wine already on your wine rack in your house. So, you know.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Now the question is, tell me your favorite red and favorite white. I don't need a brand. I just need a varietal.
My favorite red is Cabernet Franc.
Oh, very good. I love Cabernet Franc myself. Oh, I love it.
It's got everything I'm looking for.
And it's not Cabernet Sauvignon. I mean, that's the thing. The Cabernet Franc is so different than Cabernet Sauvignon that it makes it so exciting.
So different. And it's so good. Like, I think it's really hard to make Cabernet Franc.
I don't know. I've had some bad ones over my lifetime.
But it's like right up there with Petite Syrah, you know, just like such, for me, just like such great varietals with so much going on.
Yeah.
And then
I put Barbera in that list.
Barbera. Yes. Yes.
I love
Barbera. I'm with you. There's some beautiful Barbera. California
used to do quite a few Barberas, and they've gotten away from it in the recent years. And it's just like they say, okay, we're not going to do it anymore. We'll just let Italy take care of it and stop.
Yep.
But boy, that's really too bad because I've had some such beautiful Barberas out in California.
I would look in, you know, just for your listeners too, if they're interested in Barbera, there's lots of wineries in the Sierra foothills. And so do a search on Barbera in Google or whatever browser you're using. Just search Sierra Foothills Barbera.
Okay.
And you will not go wrong. You just will not go wrong. Price, I don't know what the price is, but.
Yeah, I know. Maybe, you know, you just might jump back to the Italian anyway. You know,
And then in the white world, I would say I love Sauvignon Blanc only from New Zealand.
Yeah, Monkey Bay. I love a Monkey Bay Sauvignon Blanc.
And I think that probably speaks to like my larger love for the Sancerre grape. You know, Sancerre is just, I tend to like more acidity in my white wine, like a little bit bubbly, so to speak, which is not like the common style. I mean, I would say the dominant white style, as you well know, is more of a fermented Chardonnay.
Right.
But I like very clean, you know, clean Sauvignon Blanc.
The problem with most people, though, is that acid, and when you say you like a little bit of acid, people don't like that.
I know.
And it's really sad. That little bite. I love that little bite in Sauvignon Blancs and un-oaked Chardonnays, if they're done right, you get that little bite. And people don't like that, though. Winemakers know people don't like that. And so they try to get that acid down as much as they can because it doesn't normally sell. And when you find one where a winemaker goes, oh, the heck with it. Let's make this acidic.
Yeah.
And it just is beautiful. So
I'm totally with you. It's more, I would say that that cleaner, higher acid style is more well distributed on the East Coast. It's hard to find on the West Coast. And obviously in Europe, you know, you can find that cleaner, more higher acid style of white. So yeah, I mean, I'm not a really huge big white wine person. But I will say, like, my absolute favorite drink of all drinks is, you know what, champagne.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm always promoting the benefits of champagne a lot on this show. I'm telling people it's not just for New Year's Eve. You can have champagne anytime. You know, and not just champagne, but Cremant and Prosecco and Cava and... Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so many bubblies out there that are so good, and I don't think people...
We have an amazing winery down on the Central Coast called Leticia, and and Leticia, we just have, I mean, the sparkling that they produce is just off the hook incredible.
Really?
And affordable.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
That's really how they built their reputation.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of Leticia, and I didn't realize they were so into the sparkling wines on that.
Yeah. Sparkling is a big investment.
Yeah, I know. People used to come into the winery and say, "Do you make a sparkling wine?" I go, "Nope, and I never, ever will." Yeah. And go, why? I said, because it's a royal pain. That's why. And, the amount of money you have to charge for it, people wouldn't buy it. And so I never did.
Totally. Yeah.
But, a good sparkling wine is really a good sparkling wine is hard to find. But people are looking, and I hate to say this, but people are looking for a sweeter sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know, if people start drinking sparkling wines and they like the sweeter ones, that's great and that's wonderful. That's a gateway drug into the drier ones, and I'm happy for that. But I want to see more people drink sparkling wines for any occasion. Actually, I've got a good dozen of them in my wine rack because something we pull out, we chill, and we have on just about any occasion. Nothing special. It doesn't have to be a special occasion to have the sparkling. So,
I'm with you. I so enjoy chatting with you.
No, I have too. This has been really enjoyable. Mike, do you have any comments or anything to ask Jessica?
Any what?
Mike, my co-host here. He takes a second to get it here because he's doing all sorts of stuff, tweeting and keeping everything going and all that stuff. And so I ask him if he has any comments, and it takes him a minute to wake up. I really think he naps instead of just doing all that.
I do not. No, I was just looking up a bunch of, the topics and names that you were have been talking about, like Franzia Wines. I didn't know they were founded in 1906, and like you said, from the wine group. And I was just looking up some things. I was looking up Leticia in Vineyard and Winery in Arroyo Grande.
Mm-hmm.
Grande, okay. I didn't know if it was the Grande or the regular size, but in California.
Yeah.
And was looking and chats, anything. I don't see any comments or questions, anything, but just been really enjoyable picking up a lot of good information and everything. Yeah, very good. Thank you. That was it.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Jessica, you leave, I want you to give contact information. Emails, Facebooks, Twitter, whatever is out there and whatever you guys do, give the contact information for anyone who might want to get a hold of you or have any questions or anything else.
So a great way to get hold of me is my email, which is jessica@chwine.com. You can go, so CH Wine, Cameron Hughes Wine is the company that I founded that was acquired by Vintage Wine Estates. Vintage Wine Estates has their own corporate site, vintagewineestates.com. And on there, you'll see all the different estates and direct-to-consumer companies that the parent company owns. And it just is a wonderful way to explore what we do. We're on LinkedIn, as is Cameron Hughes Wine. And on Instagram, you can find us at Vintage Wine Estates and at CH Wine. And my name is Jessica Kogan, K-O-G-A-N, and just look me up.
Yeah,
type me in your browser. You'll find me.
Yeah, there you go. And keep in mind, you're making a trip to the Napa area. Get a hold of Jessica, and she'll get your winery itinerary set up for you, which is really an important thing. I can't emphasize that enough, how great that is to have someone to be able to take care of that for you. So, Jessica, thank you so much for taking it really was a pleasure talking with you tonight. And we've been trying to do this for a long time here.
And, I know. I'm super glad that we met, and thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Me too. So have yourself a wonderful evening. And then when you hit your next plateau, maybe we can get David to hook us up again, and we can do this again.
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
Okay. Have
a
good evening.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. My, okay.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, very cool.
That was fun. The list of wineries underneath the Vintage Wine Estates family is enormous. Mm-hmm. I mean, go to the website, vintagewineestates.com, and check them out. I mean, there's a lot of wineries. There's some that I never realized were part of that I've been to and I'm familiar with. But you can check them out. And if you're ever, again, if you're making a trip out to the West Coast, then hook up with them. Because they can get you into these things a lot faster than you can yourself. And that's really important.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I was just looking at the Cameron Hughes website, how they save money going through them. They're wine traders, and they find the best wines and negotiate the best price for their customers. And they said you could typically get a $100 plus Napa Cabernet for a third of a price, or $60 a bottle. Or a $60 bottle of Pinot for under $20. Okay, that's what it. I read that wrong. They're able to offer $100 plus Napa Cabernets for a third of the price, or a $60 bottle of Pinot for under $20. Exact same wine sold under the original winery label. So.
Wow. That's a big thing there too. And it's, you know, if you get wines like that's a great way to try a little bit more expensive wines at a much cheaper price. And you know, saying, ooh, I spent $60 for this, but you can say, oh, I spent $20. I'm not a real big fan, but I'll remember next time. You don't have to spend that $60. You know, that's
right. Yeah,
great.
Sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
so
it's
that's
almost, you know, that service that they offer in I guess it's just in California, the where they make all the arrangements. It's almost like a travel agency for wineries. Which very unique. I mean, that's I wish they did it all over, because gosh, you could plan, you know, vacations around it. It's like you know, they're going to plan everything on that end and just make a whole deal out of it and use their services for when you want to do a, you know, wine days or, you know, something on your vacation plan. So, man, that's a cool service.
Excellent. That is a great service. Yeah. Excellent point. And you're right. Yeah. That's too bad they don't have them other places, because wineries It's hard to get into some wineries. I mean, you don't know always what's going on and the cost and different things like that and reservations in some areas. I mean, you get into places like Florida, you don't have to worry about reservations, but you get in places like the foothills of Texas and California and the Finger Lakes.
Trying to remember that one, Finger Lakes. I keep forgetting that. Okay, yeah, I remember now. I was like, what's that one up there up in the northeast or something?
Finger Lakes. And these, you know, it's to have a service like that, that's a good idea. And, you know, any wineries or anybody that lives amongst these areas, that would be a good business to get into. I mean, you don't have to be so much involved like Jessica is, but just yourself walk around the wineries and say, hey, you know, can I work out something with you? And I'm sure it would be a great service. And so
maybe they'll expand. I don't know that, they already got the foundation going in the biggest, you know, winery market in the country, possibly the world. I don't know, but, you got that on your plate already. You can pretty much go anywhere. Well, we're doing it in Napa. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's very.
Oh, okay.
So,
you know, our start was in Napa. Include Finger Lakes and the foothills of our hill country of Texas, and you can just expand it all over on that.
Really branch out. Sure. Quick shout out to Cap Kaplowitz of Kaplowitz Media at kaplowitz.xyz. Thank you for sharing the post regarding tonight's show. Really appreciate that. I put it on the little banner thing that went across the screen for a minute. But
Cap's going to be a guest coming up sometime within the next couple, 3 weeks. He's written a new book, and as soon as I finish reading it, I will get him scheduled because I want to be able to talk about the book a little bit and don't want to give it away because,
is it the Sherlock Holmesy one that he was writing?
Something like it. It's the title. The book is Tales of Henry Swallow, issue one. Issue one. So it sounds like he might be coming out with follow up episodes. But so far I've worked my way through it, and so far it's an interesting read.
Very cool.
We'll let him, when he's on the show, tell you why he decided to do the Tales of Henry Swallow and all that. He's a big Sherlock Holmes fan, so it's doesn't surprise me that he's doing something like this.
Very cool.
Also, when I was talking to him, we always get a group of us talking on Wednesday nights, and he was one of them. And they all wondered what Mike looked like, and I said Mike tries to stay incognito, and they all decided that you were probably in a witness protection program.
Absolutely.
They can't find any picture of you. And I said, now, if he was in a witness protection, why would he have a radio show and be on All About Wine? And they said, because he's changed his name and all that. And that's why.
I changed my name. I don't have to show myself. I don't have to show my real identity. It's radio, absolutely.
So they got you figured out. And then I said, what would he be a witness of that would require protection? That was their. These are the group of guys that did the cigar show a while back. And so, if you haven't listened to it, if you're into cigars or you want to get into cigars, it was an interesting show. It was a lot of information on there about smoking a cigar and types of cigars and all that. So check that out in the archives. It's out there.
It's good stuff. Yeah, it's a good show.
And then Cap's been on a couple of times too by himself. So you can check those out in the archives. But yeah. All right.
Yeah,
I
have a clip from the team he was on, but I won't play it. why are you bothering me? I have a little button here. All I have to push this little button, and it says, Cap, why are you bothering me on the description? So it's just button on my panel.
Go ahead and hit the button.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Yeah. Here we go.
I want to be able to sit down in my chair and have my ashtray, my cigar, a little bit of a libation if I decide to have that. And I want to be able to just be there. And if somebody comes over to me, I want to be able to yell at them and tell them to go away. And I wanted my voice to carry. And it carries better indoors when I say, why are you bothering me?
Why are you bothering me?
Why are you bothering me? There you go. So Cap will be on the show in probably a couple of weeks. So we got got him to look forward to. That's a funny clip.
What is next week? Yeah, I should try and grab some other audio from that show. It was a good show. And having them all on the air at one time, that was a good show with everybody from his the cigar.
Cigar Craig and Mike and Phil and Cap and. Contributed and told about cigars and different things. Very knowledgeable about cigars. And so,
a lot of good stories and, really cool. Let's see. Next week, the 16th. Hopefully I can do this. I don't know I've never done jury duty before, but Tuesday apparently is my day. So,
is it?
I'll see what it transpires there. For some reason somebody raised my hand. I don't know what happens, but it's my first time. I'm kind of excited and kind of what that mean, so maybe I am in witness protection.
Jury duty. I was in on jury duty. Oh geez, this had to be 15 years ago. I was on jury duty, and it was a silly case, but they asked for a trial by jury, and I was voted the foreman of the of the jury. And we went back, and I said, well, I guess the first thing to do is take a vote. And everybody immediately voted the same way. I mean, there was no split decisions. There was no debate. And I said, wow, that's too fast. Why don't we just sit here for like 10 minutes, like we really discussed it. And the clerk, or not clerk, but the guard or whatever her title would be, came in and said, you found a decision. And I said, if we don't find it, will we be sequestered overnight? And she goes, no. I said, yeah, we found a decision then. So we went back out there, and the judge said, she knew I was a foreman, and she said, Mr. Hunt, she said, I understand you're the foreman. She said, have you got a verdict? And I said, yes, you have. I said, yes, we have, Your Honor. And she goes, she told the lady, the police officer, she says, would you get the decision? And she took it from me, and the judge read the decision. I didn't get a chance to say it, and I was a little disappointed in that.
Oh, wow.
Because I thought we would be able to say, the jury, have found that the defendant not guilty, but she didn't even let me do that. So I was a little disappointed. Yes. I was disappointed in not being able to say that in there, but,
I think it was when I was in Hillsborough County, I got on one, but, called or checked in the status like the day or two before. And it says, oh, we don't need you. And I was like, well, dang it, I really wanted to, and all of a sudden this comes up. I'll find out Monday if I actually go in or not the next day, but we'll see.
They get so many many people.
Didn't really.
Reject so many people.
And, oh, wow.
You know,
might be it. Yeah. So we'll see. so that's
maybe you'll
week.
Be sequestered and get meals and all that stuff.
No, I have things to do. I have places to go.
Yeah, I know. I'm always afraid I'm going to get a letter put me on a grand jury, because they use just regular people like us for grand juries too. And I just, you know, those are the ones where they're
like
in session. Yeah, they're in session for a couple of weeks and stuff like that. And, you know, I just, I'm always afraid that's going to happen. But I don't know. Yeah.
Interesting. Well,
we're talking about now. I wonder if the government's like Google. We talk about this, and now we're going to start getting.
Yeah. Yep. Always listening. Always.
Always listening to us. Oh, there's two good people for grand jury. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yep. Well, so we'll be here next Thursday, the 16th of March. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And don't forget what this coming weekend is.
That's right.
Anyway,
Spring
I have no idea.
Forward.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's right. That's Sunday. Sunday morning.
That wasn't what you were talking
about. No, I was just like, oh, God. Whatever. I have no idea. Anyway, oh yeah, thank you. That is this weekend. That's what I was not referring to. But have a good weekend, and enjoy your hour less of sleep Sunday morning. And
thank
you all for
Jessica.
Tuning in.
And great guest.
Yeah,
I thank
you. Yep. Oh, roll the window down for a second. Roll it back up.
Yeah,
have you. Have a great week. We'll see you all next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Wow, there you go. And we return back to normal broadcasting. And so it says 2016. What time is it? 17:20. So it's still behind. This stupid thing. Let me go back to my browser. I can't see this. When I went...